Yeah. Let me just posture up here.
That's right. Hulk up.
Yeah. Get ready for the podcast.
Let's get ready.
Yeah, getting ready for the podcast, no mm-hmm. doubt.
Requires all your all of the muscles you've built over these few years.
Okay. Yeah, no doubt, hey. Like freaking I should be laying bricks or something. Spend my whole day sitting.
Yeah, that's right. I built these muscles to sit.
Yes, to do absolutely nothing with them.
I'm sure they make your thumbs extra, like I still extra get strong for gaming.
Like my wrist still hurts, yeah. Like it's the same as any, you know what I mean? If I edit for too long, it's like, doesn't change a thing.
Yeah, the pain never goes away.
Awful in that regard.
Are we ready?
I think so. Like, should I like give it a clap here? And
yeah, give it the clap.
Give it the clap. Yeah, deep inhales here as we
get the diaphragm going.
Get ready for yet another wonderful episode.
A controversy-free episode.
Yeah. Maybe.
Not
we'll
quite.
See how it goes fully on that. Yeah, we'll see how it fully goes on that. Welcome in Greg's Weekend Rental, episode 15, I believe. And today, we have some fun stuff for you. I, of course, am Greg here, joined by Jeremy.
Hello.
GameStop. The company everyone's surprised even still exists. Like, I don't know what their tagline is at this point.
Yeah.
We have one locally. We have a couple still locally, hey? We've closed a lot of them.
Three that we have? Three or four?
Okay.
Maybe.
I know, yeah, we have the one, like, really close to us, and I think one south.
And in downtown.
Oh, we still have one downtown.
I'm pretty sure.
Nice.
Maybe not. I
well,
don't
they
know.
Were in the mall. Then they moved out of the mall.
Yeah.
I don't know where they... Like, if we still have them, they're somewhere around there.
Maybe it's gone. Maybe you're right. I don't know.
So we have two or three still. Yeah. And that is literally like our game store, I guess. It's our GameStop. That's our stop for games.
Yeah.
But yeah. Crazy we still have some. Big article coming out, though, is GameStop faces unsustainable sales decline, cuts job to control costs. This is coming from Reuters here, and essentially what it's going on to say here is GameStop had to cut an unspecified number of jobs to reduce costs and reported lower fourth quarter revenue amid rising competition from e-commerce firms and weak consumer spending in an uncertain economy. An increasing mix of digital downloads is hurting physical retail, and there's simply no reason to go to the store if a consumer can just order the game and download it immediately. Revenues are highly unlikely to rebound unless management figures out a way to drive store traffic. So that's the big skinny of what's taking place with GameStop, which, I mean, maybe just sounds like a broken record to me at this point.
Yeah.
I really feel like this was the 2018 narrative around GameStop.
Yeah, and even before that, really. Like, I feel like I've been hearing about GameStop going under for the last decade, you know?
Seriously, though.
Yeah.
I'm too young to remember how steady and slow Blockbuster's decline was, but it feels like that happened in a few years. And
yeah.
I might just be crazy on that.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah, I don't remember exactly, like, you know, I definitely remember renting games in the N64 era, but then not so much in the GameCube era.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if it was buying more or we just didn't rent.
Yeah.
It just already was gone.
Yeah. And we also had a Blockbuster on one corner and then there was a Rogers Video on another corner.
Yep.
So I remember going between them to see what different
games they had. One of them had a promo.
Yeah. One game was not there. So you go across the street and check Rogers.
100%.
Yeah.
It just feels like that. It probably was a 10-year decline though. Like it probably was our parents, if they were paying attention. They were probably like, oh, Blockbuster still isn't bankrupt? Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's crazy. Because, yeah, the last decade, I would say.
Yeah.
GameStop, losing money, GameStop going bankrupt has been the narrative around them.
Yeah.
And then in 2021, you hear about them opening, an NFT marketplace. They closed it already.
Of course.
The great idea of opening up an NFT marketplace lasted all of 2 years.
Yeah.
I can only assume that was not profitable for them.
I don't think so.
So
I would be shocked if it was.
Exactly, right? I think that was right when their stock, if you remember the whole Gamer Stonks thing, mm-hmm. or what was, I'm thinking of the video game product, GameStonks. GameStonks. Yes. Yeah, that's it. Not gamer. Yeah. GameStonks, where the stock price went from, I think, $30 up to $400 or something on the short squeeze.
Yeah. And like, you know, just Reddit guys basically beating hedge fund guys at their own game.
Yeah, that was fun.
Which is lovely. But, you know, part of me thinks it's not surprising that most of the executive management at GameStop probably just lined their pockets, you know, selling their shares
when the price went up. It's one of those things where, like, it feels like the little guy won, but I can only assume it was still the big guy winning.
Yeah. Well, for sure, GameStop is losing.
Like, well, no, GameStop is, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't help them.
Did you make money on that? Did you get in on the whole thing?
No, I don't do stock picking or anything.
No,
like
you
that.
Got it. That's it's the ultimate gambling. It's grading games, but on steroids, it's way better.
That's exactly it, as it's gambling. You know, there's nary a hedge fund out there that can beat S&P over time. So it's like, why do you want to risk your your money on that? I don't know. Yeah. I think if it's like something that's your thing and you do it every day, sure. Just someone trying to get into that without the proper knowledge can easily lose everything.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who do get into it without any, like, they do lose everything. That's it's almost like a meme in itself. Like,
yeah,
that is
exactly.
Kind of the culture of young person investing.
Yeah.
Is to either, like, it's everything or nothing.
Yeah.
There is no such
thing.
There's
no middle ground.
Yeah, there's no sustainable investing.
No.
It's like options for 5-day options out there, and we're like, it's a boom or bust.
Well, everyone's concerned about getting rich overnight and seeing an immediate gratification, you know.
Exactly.
Who wants to throw money and wait 30 years for you to have something? It's like, okay. You
know. Seriously, though. And then we saw it in collectibles, too, and like all throughout the COVID years.
Yeah.
Where people aren't interested in something that doesn't double in 2 days,
yeah,
like, which is the double almost overnight.
Yeah, which is extremely, you know, short-sighted. It's like, if you miss the window of selling, you're done. You know, you paid too much in the beginning, and then you probably missed the profit window. So,
and that's why everyone, I think, just left, because it's like, now we have to own games for 5 years.
Now we actually
years.
Have to, like, be smart about it.
We have to buy Pokemon cards for more than a year. Like, you know, no one wants it.
Yeah,
it's not the society we have anymore.
Yeah, and this, like, you know, management cutting employees and all that is such a common denominator amongst American companies. You know, I think it was Nintendo that was famously, I think it was Iwata who slashed his and the executive salary.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. So like when Nintendo was in some trouble, I think during the Wii U age, they slashed executive salaries to keep all their employees because they know they have great creators and people who, you know, are important to the company's health, so they value that. And instead of, you know, it's like American companies, they cut all their employees loose, and then, you know, for basically short-term gain in stock market in their overall budget, you know.
Well, that dictates everything.
Yeah,
it's literally quarterly results.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we can, like,
they just want that short-term gain. Doesn't matter if they
cut expenses for Q3 so that we have overall revenue increase in Q3, and we will worry about Q4 when that comes around.
Yeah.
And like, the Q3's actions don't necessarily mean Q4 will be better.
Exactly.
But Q3 is going to look decent.
Yeah.
And
if that happens, that means more people might buy in because they don't see what they're doing.
I don't know what the even... It's like you said, right? The CEOs there, Iwata cutting salaries. You'd never see that in an American company.
No, absolutely not.
It's just like never.
It's, you know, it's part of the reason why, you know, Japan has companies that are like Nintendo, over 100 years old.
Yes.
You know, they have just a different, not in it for themselves view of these kinds of things.
Well, it's actually for the company.
Yeah.
Like, the company itself has to prosper.
And they last.
Yes. You know,
they can outlast most American companies just because of that.
And it makes sense. And, you know, just talking about GameStop here, so if they're going to go under, what's going to happen with them? I mean, I personally feel like their bankruptcy is nothing but an inevitability.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
Without an extreme business model overhaul.
Maybe I'm just negative. I don't see it. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
How? But, I mean, I don't see it, but Sean, Reserved Investments, he does think they can last. He released a video there the other, I think it was last week, going over like an 8-step plan to save GameStop.
Yeah.
So some of the things are very easy, right? Like, close all the bad stores, obviously. GameStop, I think I said, even our city, I think that probably at what peak we had 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds realistic.
Yeah.
Now we're down to 2, 3. Mm-hmm. We could probably go down to 1 in the city.
Yeah.
To be completely honest.
Yeah.
If we just had the downtown location, I don't think anyone would cry about it.
Yeah.
But close all the bad stores. Unfortunately, like you said, this would involve firing people again. But yeah. With a sustainability plan or with an actual plan of action, firing people in itself sucks. Not a bad option.
Yeah.
Like, you have to cut expenses. It is what it is.
Yeah.
GameStop sucks. We have to get rid of people.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, too, again, just very sensible here, and you were getting to this with your Japanese companies, is pay people actual wages. Yeah. Hire people who actually care.
Yeah.
GameStop is a very specialized experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the last time I went into a GameStop and like, I mean, I guess I've kind of given up on GameStop in a lot of ways too, but when I go into a store like that, a retro video game store, any kind of gaming store, I want the employee to be an expert in the field.
Yeah.
Is that too much of an expectation?
No, I don't think so, to be honest. Like, I think if you offer a decent wage for people, you'll get people who really want to be there.
You know,
obviously it'll be more competitive. But it's not just like a, you know, minimum wage gig.
That's, I guess, how it feels. Like, I expect to see a minimum wage worker who applied for this job, who might know the video games. They play on a TV. Like, you know, they probably played video games in their life, but I don't expect someone who actually lives for it or cares about it or has knowledge beyond being a retail worker.
Yeah.
So I definitely think if you were to actually bring in people who care again,
mm-hmm.
you can do something special with the retail environment, the retail experience, walking into a GameStop, having actual kiosks set up with new games, having actual people who care. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Maybe I just expect way too much.
Yeah.
But it'd be awesome to go into GameStop and play the new Princess Peach game.
Yeah.
Give me a little demo.
Yeah. I'd go there to play games. Like,
that'd be great.
It'd be fun.
Imagine if they had demos of all this stuff just set up. It'd be like, oh, I can actually, like, where can you try anything for Switch? Is it possible to demo stuff anymore?
You know what? The last Switch kiosk I've seen, Toys R Us had one. It's gone now. All of their game stuff is gone.
What?
In Toys R Us here in the city.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that like a all Toys R Us store thing, or is that like Regina really sucks thing?
Probably the latter. You know what, though? Interestingly, I don't remember what I was at the mall for, but I went to GameStop there. And they had a table set up in front of the store with a special Pokemon promotion where they were doing like, you can get this little folder, which has a coin in it, and it has a mini booster pack just for free. You can get it and you can open it up, and whatever rare you get, you can keep it or you can trade it for an equivalent rare that they had in binders. I was like, this is great. There's tons of kids there.
That is fantastic.
Why can't more GameStops do stuff like that? Like, that's such a cool idea.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with what GameStop could be or should be, is this place for an actual in-person experience.
Yeah.
Like, yes, they are going to sell games at the end of the day, but, like, I need a reason to walk in there.
Yeah.
It's like that article said, I can just buy everything digital now,
mm-hmm.
and if not digital, I don't need to go to a game-specific retailer when Amazon exists, too.
Yeah.
I guess that's digital.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like... But order a physical online.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what? I feel like they need to offer a more boutique experience to really survive. Like an electronics boutique, perhaps. like a store that has retro stuff. You know, something more than just the stuff you can order online. You know, you can't just go to Amazon and order a mint copy of a Super Nintendo game or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's a reason to go into stores because of collectibles turnover. It's like, oh, they got new games in this week, you know?
Well, that was one of Sean's big things here is when so we get people in there who actually care about stuff.
Yeah.
And then it goes to have people who can actually identify fakes.
Yes.
Hire employees who know what the heck they are doing at the store.
You absolutely need that if you're going to go the retro route.
When did they implement their retro thing? That must have been 2019, maybe 2020.
I don't even know.
Okay, they started taking stuff in, obviously.
And what did they do with it?
Well, they got a ton of fakes.
Yeah.
The first and foremost, they were taking in almost anything, right? Mm-hmm. So fake Super Nintendo, Game Boy Advance, especially DS, again, heavily fake system.
Yeah.
They were sending them all to corporate, though. I think very select stores were getting retro actually in person, but the rest all went to online, and that was the only way you could actually shop GameStop retro.
Right.
So good you're doing that. And maybe it made some money with all the fakes they took in, like it probably didn't. But what's the point of taking in all of this retro inventory? And then they were selling it stock photo style.
Yeah.
With like,
which is absolutely good. Ridiculous.
It's tone deaf. Yeah. Who are you selling to?
Yeah.
Like you are.
You're not an expert in what you're selling. You're claiming it's a certain condition when it could very well be not, because you're not experts.
Yep.
You know, you're doomed to fail.
It feels like you just missed all audiences.
Yeah.
Collectors can't order from this. And random people. I mean, I guess.
Random person who wants a cartridge of Super Mario, maybe.
But I feel like GameStop, like you're going to have to, they aren't the source for that.
No.
So the random person is not going to go to GameStop.
Yeah.
They probably don't even know it has retro.
Yeah. No, honestly, I think they need to outfit some of their stores with a boutique experience with managers who know retro collecting, who can curate an in-store collection of that kind of stuff. You know, I feel like that would be an interesting offering, a reason to go in.
I mean, call me crazy. I think GameStop as a brand, as a retro video game store, could eliminate most retro game store competition if done right.
Yeah.
They have the money, they have the reach, they have the name brand recognition.
Yeah.
If it was like, oh, we're GameStop Retro or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely.
GameStop Boutique. Who knows?
If they actually put effort into being something that catered towards the collector mentality, because with physical media going away now, we need specialized physical media experiences.
Yeah.
Specialized physical media stores.
Yeah, it can't be run of the mill anymore.
No, you can't. And if you're going to be a store that, like, let's say, you know, PS5 already doesn't have a disc drive, games are less, the Xbox might not have any kind of physical whatsoever next generation, could happen now. If they're going to continue to carry the consoles or the makes and stuff, it's like, well, why? Who are you catering to at this point?
Yeah.
GameStop still having some leverage that they do have could go out of their way and be like, if you're going to drop that, we're going to drop you. And we're not carrying Xbox anymore. In our store, we don't have the shelf space or the care to advertise you in our store, sell your consoles when there's literally no game churn that exists.
Yeah.
Because why do they want to use the resources on that?
Yeah.
Would they actually do it?
I mean, judging from the past decisions of this company, I don't know. I don't know if anyone there has the vision to really make this happen anymore.
That's where my pessimism comes from.
Yeah.
Is it almost feels like, I feel like they will feel like they've tried everything.
Yeah.
Like when it's like, you guys haven't actually committed to anything in a serious manner.
And I feel like maybe none of them really have any skin in the game either. You know?
Well, Q4 results, baby. Like that's all the turnaround is. And this is going to be a multi-year turnaround if they actually want to make this last another 15 years.
Yeah.
And I agree. I don't know if anyone has the skin in the game to actually dedicate everything it would take.
Yeah.
Or to just care, I guess. Like, you could sit there and collect a paycheck with the ship going down, or stress yourself out endlessly and, like, really try to change this.
Yeah. Yeah, GameStop management is quiet quitting.
I mean, given where we're at, it's kind of reasonable.
Yeah.
I think. But with Sean's plan then, right, so we're swapping our stores, we're bringing in retro, we have people who can actually do it, we have people who care. So when you go to GameStop, you're getting the physical media experience that soon will not exist. This will be an exclusive physical media experience, much like going to a game store now.
Right.
So the other thing he says is get your exclusive partnerships with the people still making physical media.
Mm-hmm.
There should be GameStop exclusive LRG drops, GameStop exclusive super rare
games. Yeah, why they haven't offered that kind of stuff yet? I'm like, what's wrong with you?
The way you said with retro game collecting, there's always collection churn. You have to go in to see the new stock and stuff.
Yeah.
If every
That's
week
the whole
two...
reason I went into like P&P in Winnipeg. Because it's like, oh yeah, what's new here?
You know
week?
They're going to have new stuff.
Yeah.
And if GameStop was at least doing these limited drops or something, it didn't have to be limited. It could be like print to order, but exclusively through GameStop and only in person.
Yeah.
You cannot do this online.
Yeah.
You have to come to our storefront.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a win.
It seems kind of obvious.
Like a no-brainer win.
Yes. And had they actually done this with LRG, I mean, back in 2018, 2019, before they were this freaking giant that they are now, they could have done it for very cheap.
Yeah.
You know, they could have given them a big paycheck that, relatively speaking, was not.
Yeah.
Especially given GameStop's position.
Yeah.
These days, yeah, it would cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly.
They've gotten, you know, it's one of those companies that has really gotten too big for its own good, I think, right now. So that's why there's been this immense struggle over the last few years, closing down all these stores, you know, cannibalizing electronics boutique. You know, it's like, I think they have to think slightly smaller.
Well, they brought in, they became like junk stores.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in their quest to sell anything, to find anything that kind of profits.
Yeah. And, you know, the ridiculous notion of opening up games and selling them as new. Like, that's already...
Can we stop doing that finally?
That's already a crime in itself.
You know? Like, are they finally going to clue in that, like...
Like, no one wants
the physical
this.
Media crowd, the only crowd that can actually sustain you guys existing, absolutely hates you
yeah.
for opening up games and giving us something open.
Yeah.
Like,
and having the gall to selling
yes,
it as new.
For the same price.
Yeah.
Like, everyone hates you for that. And those are the people you need to appease as we go into this digital future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How they haven't stopped doing that, and I mean, like, gutting DS games, like, oh man, it's like if GameStop actually had done things with a brain properly, not in this kind of like mass consumerism. I think they were just like, you know, to churn and burn, quick moving, we're always gonna just like get that crap out, we're bringing the new stuff in. Mm-hmm. If they would have actually just had the foresight of collector, I guess, or of retro gaming to some degree. Even just to not throw out endless amounts of Nintendo DS cases,
yeah.
endless amounts of 3DS, Wii, like, you know, they would just gut the games. They'd gut them in the name of saving space.
Yeah.
They would gut CD cases. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And now, you know, 10 years after the fact,
yeah,
they've thrown away millions in revenue and they could have actually created a culture.
A secondary marketplace for
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
A culture around it, right? GameStop's yeah. culture would be, oh, here's the place where you can go get your physical used games. They have good cases. They clean stickers. Like, it could have been this thing that they do.
Yeah, missed opportunity.
It just hurts, man.
Yeah.
It just hurts.
You know, when I went there, like, on the last, you know, blowout sales, they had, like...
I was going to say, you just picked up a whole bunch of stuff on clearance,
eh? Yeah, for, like, a dollar. Like, even... they had some even old DS games, like, for a dollar. Complete. I was like, you could easily, if you had any kind of online infrastructure, you know, you could sell that
easily. Any kind of in-person traffic.
Or in-person traffic.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, imagine DS games out for a buck. If anyone actually, if there was actually, because those sales that you went for, they had been advertised on Reddit, I think, for already a week. And you went in there and still got a ton of stuff.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, some good stuff, a lot of lower tier stuff. But, you know, when you're paying a dollar for something, it's like, don't be picky. Just take whatever you can get.
Yeah, you say, like, you didn't get a bunch of copies of Destiny, so it's like, yeah. you know, you still got something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And a buck each.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it was still there in our local store.
Yeah.
Well after the fact that it should not have been. Because
mm-hmm.
I know every time I go in there, the only thing I go in there for now is Pokemon cards, actually. Funny enough, I don't even go there to buy games. I go there to buy some packs.
That's funny.
When I need a hit.
Yeah. You know what? I went to a local card shop here, Nutman. It's like, so the store's been around a long time. They make like different types of like roasted nuts and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nutman is like we buy their nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. But they have a card shop inside their store now because their son was a collector.
Really?
And they've, during the pandemic, they're like, you know, he had a collection of cards. They stock brand new Pokemon graded cards.
Really?
Stuff in a glass case. I went out, I was like, this is great.
Where is this?
It's in North Albert, just up Albert way.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a really cool store. I bought a graded, you know, card there, and I was like, it's just cool, you know, I want to support this kind of. And there was guys and like people just coming in and out. They're like, did you get the truckload of, you know, new sealed booster packs in? And like, you know, sports card guys, Pokemon guys, is like, man,
it's crazy because you talk about that experience of like actually doing an in-store. Like, mm-hmm. We don't have an LGS, do we?
No.
Like,
and this is what happens when you have people who know and care about what they're selling.
Yes.
You build a community.
Yes. Because then it's like, hey, I'm getting Temporal Forces. I don't know what the brand new pack is right now. I think it's that.
Okay.
That sounds kind of right. But when you're doing that, it's like, oh man, we're doing this. Like, we're going to have you can do an in-store box break. We're going to break a booster pack for everyone who comes in. You join a raffle, you can get yourself a free pack. You can like cards is so, you can do so much with cards.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
due to how small each thing is. Like, video games are 60, or I guess 60, oh my god, what year is it? And video games are $100 a pop.
Yeah.
So you can't, it's harder to be like, oh, we're going to give away 30 copies.
Yeah,
to,
you can't know,
suddenly
do that.
You just gave away $3,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Pack of Pokemon cards, like $5.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's much, much easier in that regard.
Yeah.
But you know, like, there was a guy in there who came and bought a booster box of Pokemon cards, and he does, like, box breaks with his daughter. Like, you know, just like a fun, you know, parent-child thing. It's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, well, my younger brothers do it too. Like, yeah. Together, just as friends, you know.
Yeah.
Just buy a few packs, and like, that's when I crack them too. I usually do it with them, because it's like, man, sitting alone and opening it kind of
so
feels
sad.
Like, it feels like I'm a bit of an addict.
What am I doing with my life?
Seriously. Who wants to just crack seven packs alone? The issue is when you start going like net zero value, and it's like, wow, I just burned $50 on like $3 worth of cards.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that's all it is.
Yeah.
You're just gambling. So it's much, much, much more fun.
It's a minimal, I don't want to say minimal risk, but minimal investment gamble
that you
can have fun with.
Yeah, it's $5 a spin, basically. So it's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, you can just do it.
But I mean, it's
way
could,
more fun to do with friends.
Yeah, much better than throwing cash in a slot machine at a casino or something, you know.
It is. At least you get to keep something. You have something a little bit fun.
Yeah.
Albeit, you know, still only lasts like a minute, but hey, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
It's there.
The last thing from Sean's, and this is the craziest thing I think he said, and remember, Sean is kind of a detractor of this entire area, but he said with GameStop going towards a more retro boutique experience, they should bring in graded video games.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts. All right. So.
You know what? It's something that I wonder could even work with the business model they have, just because of, you know, they're really a volume game style business, right? You buy like case packs from distributors and sell games at volume to get your profit. So to sell like graded games requires, I think, a different model, because it's more difficult, I think, to even manage the inventory. It has to be managed at a local level, I think. That's why I said, like, you know, if you have managers who know about this kind of stuff, you could feasibly do it.
But yes.
But I think it would be more limited to a... That's something you could sell online because it's graded.
You don't need to be an expert in it. Yep.
You could sell it online. But if you do it in-store, I think it would have to be curated by a manager, someone who knows something about that.
Well, yeah, that goes back to bringing in people, giving them a real wage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would. I think of Standard Gaming, who used to be the graded games marketplace that existed, where you could go and they had extremely fair prices.
Yeah.
Extremely fair.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they'd be buying something at auction and they'd mark it up like say they paid $2,400. They might put it on their website for like $26.99. Like, it was like minimal markup.
Yeah.
Factory sealed graded Switch games would be like $139.99 for the 9.8 A++. They couldn't sustain. There simply wasn't enough interest.
Yeah.
So I don't know if any, like, it's just, you know, you said that the Nutman is doing cards. Like, graded cards are so ubiquitous at this point.
Yeah.
Everyone, even if you're very casual into Pokemon, you're aware.
Yeah.
You're aware of value. You're
and
aware
they're,
of
they're
grading.
Easy, you know, like, they're small, easy to store.
Yep. Yep. You can have a shoebox and have 100 of them.
Yeah.
So 100 graded video games is like half of this room.
Yeah.
Like, and it's right. Not even that much of an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of space once you start having volume of graded video games. Comics, again, are just smaller.
Yeah.
Games is tough. I just don't know if you can actually get to a point of worth it. Would it ever be worth it? And I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's hard enough.
At a macro level. Yeah. At a micro level with someone who knows what they're doing, maybe
just do it in the most populous stores that you possibly have. You open up something called like GameStop Retro or GameStop Collect.
Yeah,
like,
you create a corner of the store that has a glass case, you know, that has specialty items.
Yep, and that is your... You
know, give those people a reason to come in.
Exactly, and you have to do it. You're literally your most populated things. These are your flagship stores that are going to run this thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it could work. Maybe it could be something.
Yeah.
But in general, I think they just need to get back to being something real.
Yeah.
Something real. I guess I walk into GameStop at this point and I just look around and I see junk everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man.
Commercial junk.
Yeah, commercial junk. Rather than an actual catered, not even a collector, just like caring about gaming deeper than just like knick-knack crap everywhere.
Yeah. You know what? I think if they cemented themselves as a company who actually cares about physical media, that could actually win them a lot of interesting support amongst.
At bare minimum, it would win back customer sentiment.
Yeah. Well, you know what I even find interesting is like we used to have a Sunrise Records, right?
Yep.
Like that kind of store. They had like anime DVDs and Blu-ray. You know, anime is something I feel that is still kind of difficult to consume at a streaming level because a lot of shows just aren't available. And a lot of times you have to look for like a movie or a show that is older and is out of print and really difficult to find.
Yeah, you pop have to like VPNs and stuff. Like anime is still tricky.
I agree. Anime can be tricky, but I feel like maybe there's an interesting angle there with, you know, anime DVDs and Blu-rays that, you know, people might find interesting, like in terms of physical media.
No, I agree. It's way better than, again, like I think the vast majority of like junk knickknacks in their stores should be out.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Cater to physical media.
They bought that, what was it, Geeky Things or whatever?
Yeah, Geek Center. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was cool. Like, I remember, you know, looking at their website all the time and being like, oh, that's some, like, really neat stuff. But then GameStop bought them and now it's just, you know, it's like this junk is now in our stores and no one wants it.
Yeah.
You know?
Blending with DVDs, anime, and stuff would be perfect.
Yeah.
They could blend with manga. Like, you could be a physical
media giant.
Yes.
There's literally no other business like that.
I know.
Besides, like, a place like Sunrise Records, but they don't really have games or anything.
Oh, they don't, and they don't specialize. It's a record store in my brain, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's Sunrise Records.
Yeah, exactly.
I associate it with vinyl and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, change their name to Media Stop and, like, they could just bring in everything.
Yeah.
Your one-stop shop for physical.
Yeah.
They truly could win back so many customers if they're like, oh, we are never dropping physical. Like, we will be physical till we die.
We will,
like,
partner with Limited Run and Super Limited and all these other games.
Yeah, we're going to make sure that PS5 or Sony still brings us physicals, even if they won't to other stores. Like, we'll get collector's editions. We will get, like, they could really headway something here.
Yeah.
Especially as, like, Best Buy gets rid of physical. You said Toys R Us gets rid of physical.
Yeah, and it's like, what reason do I go in there, you know?
GameStop could really do something.
Yeah.
In being the only big physical player.
Yeah. Yeah, and their stores aren't massive. Like they don't have the overhead of Best Buy.
No, they don't.
So, you know, it's easy to stock a little GameStop store with a bunch of physical media.
Yes.
You know.
They have the shelf space. Their stores are small. Close all the bad ones. Ah, man. I just don't know if it'll actually happen.
Yeah.
It feels...
It needs vision to work.
Yes.
And I don't
feel like that. You and I sit here too passionately, and it's like, you could do so much. And they're just like, yeah.
I'll just take my check and ride the roller coaster down.
Yeah, seriously. You know? And in another 5 years, you know, it'll be like, oh, GameStop closes 80% of its stores or whatever, and that'll be that.
Yeah.
PS5 will be all digital. Xbox will be all digital. GameStop won't exist. And physical media will be a relic.
Yeah. It's kind of sad to hear. But, like, you know, it's something that's also, I think, difficult for a new company to do.
Oh, of course it is.
You know, like, I don't know if
they need the money and, like they need the money and the clout to be able to do these, like, big things.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I feel like a lot of, you know, physical media stores will just be local chains.
Yep.
You know, if GameStop can't pull this off, then I think that's what it will be, like comic book stores.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Where you don't have a giant, you just have mom and pop's comic store. We are going to exist for 10 years.
Local
we
company might... for, you know, three stores or something.
Yep. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Hopefully, anyway, because, like, I would love to. We love physical media.
Yeah.
We want to see something last.
Yeah.
On the topic of physical media, going back to the collector side of things, totally different pivot here. Castlevania on NES on eBay sold for $90,000 open auction.
Wow.
And at first, that is crazy. That's insane. We know who bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be paid.
Yeah.
$90,000 raw on eBay.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, anyone who wants to hang tab Castlevania knows the struggle. You know, where else can you? That's one of those things that's just really difficult to find and ask for.
I think it's pop 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I was seeing different. If VGA would ever publish a frickin' pop report, man, we'd know. But it's either 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Is the last word on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what were people thinking the grade of this would be?
Oh, it's going to be one of the top copies.
Okay.
This is going to be like anywhere from 9.0 to 9.4.
Okay.
So as far as like, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. As good as you could hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So really a treasure. And I think for someone who bought it as an investment or even just to flip it, they'll definitely have room.
Dad, do you think you could just flip it right now?
I think you could throw that thing on Heritage.
Yeah, is that like, yeah, you think?
Make another 50 grand or something. I don't know.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, is like, when you sell something like this on eBay, you don't reach the right people, I guess is the way I would put it.
Yeah.
Like the Alexis Ohanians of the world probably aren't bidding on eBay auctions.
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, that's not like eBay. eBay doesn't send you catalogs or stuff. It's like Heritage will actually mail you a catalog. You can flip through it and be like, oh, I'm bidding on that.
Everything's catered to you.
Yeah.
Like you being a $1 million client,
yeah.
You get, you know, I get the call. I get the books too. What am I, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, they shouldn't send me the books. God knows I'm not buying anything in there. But for these people who have the actual money to do it, yeah, the entire auction experience is an experience. Going back to like kind of GameStop with the boutique experience, that's kind of what you get from these auction houses.
Yeah.
Everything's online, but you get this catered...
it's a catered, cohesive experience by people who care about that stuff.
Exactly. And they're going to make sure that you as a customer are like having fun with it. Like, oh, here's your magazine. Like, here's the auction dates. Like,
yeah,
it is. It's its own experience too to go bid on these things. But when you throw something like this on eBay, especially raw, because I feel like, again, a lot of the big players just don't want to mess with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, why would you?
Yeah.
eBay doesn't have the checks and balances in places to protect buyer and seller if anything actually does happen at the scale of $90,000. Be it mail lost, the game was fake for some reason. Just whatever it is,
there's
right?
There's so much risk.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my first thought, too, was, like, that's strong for eBay, $90,000. I didn't think it would crack 100. It just sounded fake for eBay. It's just like, probably not. But, yeah, I think you can just flip it.
Yeah.
Is there any, like Castlevania, $90,000. Does Castlevania deserve it?
I mean, it's one of the OG greats. I don't know if it's as relevant as it used to be.
How does Castlevania stack up now?
Yeah. Yeah. Castlevania is a series that maybe could be reinvented for the modern era. Like, I feel like there's an opportunity there because there really hasn't been many games in the last... Like, when was the last one? 360?
What was the last one?
It's that 360 game,
in my
I'm
head,
sure.
I have Lords of Shadow 2. Is that literally it? No.
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because you know what? We've had Bloodstained, which is the next best thing.
That is by Konami, right? Do they have anything to do with it?
I actually don't know.
I need to look up the most recent Castlevania game here.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I don't know if Konami actually had anything to do with it, but they certainly marketed themselves as a Castlevania style game because you have Tom DuBois, who was the American artist for all those covers, doing the artwork for those limited run game releases.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there's definitely a tie in there, whether it's spiritual or actually by the company, I don't know.
Yeah, Lords of Shadow 2 was the last mainland game in the franchise to date.
And that's 360?
2014. Yeah, 360 PS3.
Yeah.
Like, due to Konami shifting focus to mobile games and gambling in the 2010s. Like, I hate that they're
just
a pachinko
what
machine
wants.
Or whatever. It's just like, why? Oh my god.
Yeah.
Just give us more Castlevania games, no pachinkos.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dead Cells return to Castlevania. I don't know what that even means. Dead
That's
Cells
a crossover.
Return. Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like you said, with Bloodstained, Ritual of the Night is the closest thing, I guess, we have to a Castlevania still.
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't the Netflix show really good? I think I watched, like, season one.
Yeah.
Maybe I watched all of season one. Like, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Yeah. Really, like, heartfelt, too. Like, there were some moments there when I was like...
I did not expect to cry tonight.
Yeah, with, like, Dracula and his son. I'm like, oh, my God. Like... You know, there's some real deep stuff here. So.
Learning that Lords of Shadow 2 is the last game is baffling to me. This is blowing my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
How has it been dormant for 10 years?
Yeah. It's like it's the perfect property to give to a AAA developer to really God of War style it, you know, come out with something totally new.
It would perfectly fit the formula of modern God of War.
Yeah.
You could do a very similar thing.
Yeah.
It has such good characters, such good world. Mm-hmm. You could make an extremely compelling video game that's like 20 to 30 hours gone. Like,
I know what you meant.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying there. You could do something real special with Castlevania.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, I think it's inevitable that the game will be brought back. The franchise name itself is too big.
Yeah.
It has to come back in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be the only thing that would give me pause as a long-term holder of something like that, would be the relevance of the franchise. But you know what? I think it's forever going to be known as a holy grail for NES collectors, and especially in hang tab. So
I kind of feel the same way when you get to certain games that transcend.
Yeah.
Like, you just like, oh, this is
like
now.
Stadium events.
It's locked in.
Yeah.
Whether you care about it or not. Like, I will never own Stadium Events. I just don't care.
Yeah.
You know, for the 20,000 for a cartridge, whatever it costs now, 15,000 to 20,000 for a cartridge. There's a lot of stuff I'd rather buy.
Yeah.
Right. That's all it comes down
to. Me too. I'd rather buy, you know, some random comic art and stuff like that.
There you go, right?
Yeah.
I'd sooner have a mint Mario 64.
Yeah.
Like, people dunk on it, but like, I would rather have that. If I'm spending $20,000,
yeah,
I'd rather have something I really care about.
Yeah.
Rather than the game that we all care about because it's rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing against Stadium Events, but just
we've
as
railed
I get,
on it before.
Yeah, exactly. As I get older with collecting, I'm trying.
Yeah.
To care more about things I actually care about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You want to feel something, you know, when you own something. It's like,
and Castlevania resonates with me.
Yeah.
Not that I played it a ton, but it's like, man, that's like,
yeah,
that's Castlevania.
It's great art.
That's it.
It's a great gray box, you know, Metroid, Castlevania, all those titles had these great cover art and kind of unique look to them on the NES system. So
I already have the Famicom disc one too, because it's like, it's Castlevania.
Yeah.
So of course I went back and got the Japanese, like, That's where it originated, you see. So everyone should pump Japanese games.
It's the first print.
It's the first print. You gotta. Who wants this North American crap for 90,000? You can go buy a first print for like $500.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
Interesting. You know, it's that fact that makes it a bit less sophisticated than book collecting, because like when you look at it, like if you want to collect Harry Potter or Tolkien books, you know, you go to the UK. That's where they were first published.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the most valuable editions are. Games are kind of a different animal, you know, because I think just the prevalence of the collector base in North America has decided.
Yeah.
That's what's really fueled the market.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Are there such a thing as North American printed Harry Potter books?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are they?
Because they changed the name.
Right.
Like Philosopher's Stone is Sorcerer's Stone.
So first print Sorcerer's Stone, does that have?
It has value for sure, but nothing like the original UK.
Yeah,
and the art is different too. They did their own artwork. They don't look quite as like fun as the UK.
Okay.
The UK and Canadian versions have the same artwork.
Yes.
And I've sort of gotten into collecting the Harry Potter series, the Canadian variants. Because the first
haven't you heard Canadian's worthless, man?
I know,
like, what are you?
You know, but it's so much fun. It's so difficult to find. Like Harry Potter in Philosopher's Stone in first print and Chamber of Secrets came out at the same time in Canada. And they had these unique blue boards. They weren't pictorial boards like they were in the second prints. So I just got a Chamber of Secrets first print, and I've like been waiting for one to pop up at a reasonable price, because usually like around $1,000.
Oh my god, that is actually some value.
Yeah, yeah. So
where'd you find this?
Like,
where'd
I got mine from a book dealer.
Like, you have a relationship?
No, or I was following the listing, and there was he randomly like slashed the price. It's in near fine condition. Really lovely copy. Slash the price to like 40% off. I bought it.
Give me that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Oh, no. I mean, sure.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's cool. It's a really neat, interesting niche that I don't think has really been exploited yet.
Did you say exploited or explored?
Both.
So, yeah.
Exploited,
why are you going after
sure,
these books again here?
Explored. Yeah.
Why are we going after these books again? You're just a diehard collector, right? That's I just really care about it.
Yeah. It's
why
just
has
fun.
No one exploited this?
It's just fun. Because you know what? I was in a thrift store the other day, and I found a first print paperback of Chamber of Secrets. Never seen one exist before.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's like, wow, okay.
Cool. If you can go into these categories that still aren't exploited, then you can have a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, it's just fun.
It's almost like VHS hunters who just like, I think that's why there's so much anger there too now.
Yeah.
It's like, I used to go into a thrift store and buy, I used to buy great stuff for nothing. Yeah. But now everyone knows about the great stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, so like, it's like,
oh,
yeah, exactly. Kind of takes away some of the fun when you're not the only one having it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that just requires knowledge. You know, you need to know what to look for.
Absolutely. So. And anyone can learn it. That's the thing. Like, you're not special because you're out there buying it. It's like, man, anyone can learn this.
Yeah.
Then it just becomes, how much time do you want to sink into hunting?
Yeah. And do you actually enjoy that process?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you don't, like, stop. Yeah. If you don't, just stop, because you're going to waste your time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more of a waste of time than anything else.
Yeah, definitely.
But
do you think we'll see the Castlevania pop up on the market now that we know who bought it?
Oh man, is Tom listening? does he listen to this podcast here? I don't think he will. I don't know. I've only spoken to him sparsely so far. Yeah. Hopefully me and him are going to sit down and like do the whole story of where these games are coming from. Because if you saw the eBay listing, they posted up a lot more stuff than just Castlevania. There's like an $11,000 Burger Time hang tab.
Right.
There was Trojan.
I didn't actually realize it was the same seller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trojan went for $6,000. That was a hang tab copy, really early Capcom. There was Predator, Rambo, Gauntlet, Tengen. There's probably like 15 games or so. All from the same seller. Really nice condition. Some really early, really rare stuff. So I'll get the full story, hopefully.
Yeah.
And be able to talk about that more. But my guess is that Tom will hold it.
Yeah.
That
I wouldn't
is my
be,
guess.
I wouldn't be surprised.
He got it for a price that I think you can hold it. Like, say you had to pay $120, $130, getting closer to what it might go for at the auction house. It's like, maybe just flip it, make $10,000, and, you know,
get out.
Yeah.
Because the capital cost is so much higher.
Exactly. Like, I can't afford $130 anyway, so, but I could make some money. I can leave, call it quits. Hopefully at $90, he can stomach it.
Yeah.
And actually keep it, actually hold it. I hope so.
Yeah.
That's my gut on that. I hope. I think he will. I think he will.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
I think it's one of those titles that you'd be very hard pressed to pry from another collector. So
you won't. Yeah. You just won't.
Yeah.
One of them. I don't know if you saw my video. One of them's owned by Eric Nierman, the dentist that was in the Carl Jobes video.
Yeah.
One of them's held by the owners of Comic Connect. I'm pretty sure it's in the hands of Vincent Zerullo.
Yeah, Metropolis.
Yes.
Yeah,
that person.
Yeah, I actually visited their office when I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Did you get to talk to Vincent?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I didn't.
It was not site.
I just went there randomly. I was just like, just to check it out.
Yeah, fair. I would go too. Why not?
Yeah.
But so they brought theirs to market like a few years ago for $1.25 million. I don't know if it ever traded hands or not.
Yeah.
If it did, it went to another...
That's a big pandemic price, but you know what?
Oh, back it then, is. You I bet it is.
I wouldn't be shocked if someone pulled the trigger on it
in 2022. Even if it went for like $750,000, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Like, not shocked at all. It was extremely, very likely worth that price. You know what I mean? Like, worth
that
price.
Yeah, in that time.
In that
bubble,
context, at that time, it was worth that price.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a lot of people pay prices that it was worth back in the pandemic, and... We saw a lot of it played out, but
yeah.
If it did trade hands, undoubtedly it went to another person who can afford to just sit on it.
Yeah.
So that's two of them locked up. That's three right there with the new one. That's it. You have three other copies, and I think they're in long-term collections.
Yeah.
Because these are owned by the old VGA guys.
Yeah, right.
Truthfully.
Yeah.
That's who has this stuff.
Yeah.
It's people who've been
people
in the hobby
probably
for 15
have,
years.
You know, very little money into it. They don't.
Yes.
They don't feel pressured to sell it.
When you pay $2,000 or even less probably for some of these, right? When you're into it for $1,000, $2,000, it's like, well, the only time you're ever going to sell it is for a major cash out.
Yeah.
And if you are financially stable and like, you're just not going to sell,
yeah,
just keep it.
Yeah.
Just truthfully, it probably will go up in value. Probably.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. You're
I'm
willing
sure
to.
It would, yeah. Such a low population, you know, first print key title. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
If there were 10 to 15 copies, 10 to 20, I think it'd be different.
I agree.
Because your buyer's pool drops immediately after that.
Yeah.
But
with as limited as it is, I think it's very safe. So long as the hobby, collectibles are staying. They're not going anywhere. This is not going anywhere. Graded games aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
It'll go up in value.
Yeah. Something like that. You know, there are so many other markets that are so much smaller than game collecting, and they have, you know, $1 million treasures easily. All it takes is a few people with money to fight over something.
Yep.
That's all it takes. Two or three people.
Exactly. And now that we went through this wave one, if you want to call it, where like everyone knows about it now, it all, like, you know, how I said with the Pokemon cards, everyone knows graded Pokemon cards exist. Yeah. Even the most casual of people. Now it's like, most people are aware of graded video games now. It's still not nearly as ubiquitous, but it's in people's minds.
Yeah.
The value is there. The collectability is there. Like, hey, I should really take care of this. Hey, this might be worth grading. Only going to get bigger from here. The seed has been planted.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But with that, thank you so much for listening this week. Make sure to rate the podcast. If you guys are listening on the YouTube, make sure to hit the like button, leave a comment down below. It helps out everything. And I'll see you guys next week.